happy festive Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. We back, baby.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you how your holidays were because they're here to hear us talk about football, presumably.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of football to get into. We'll be talking about Messi, explosive interview there. We're talking about Thomas Tuchel and Paris Saint-Germain. We've got a full slate of Premier League, plenty going on, really tight at the top. Everton second in the table. How about that?
Liverpool top.
But let's start with Arsenal and Chelsea. And to do that, let's talk to Don Hutchinson. Don, it was all crisis at Arsenal. And if you want to view it through a glass half full lens, I'll just get this out of the way. It's a big 3-0 win over Chelsea, yes.
3-1.
3-1. Oh, yeah. I don't count the goals at the end of the missed penalties.
Still counts, you know.
But you have one as a penalty where Tierney kind of, you know, he's clever playing for it. One is an unstoppable free kick you can do nothing about. And the other one, Saka's chip. We love Saka, but...
Great goal. Fantastic inspiration.
As somebody who scored a chip or two in his time, did he mean that?
Listen, I listened to the interview after the game, after seeing the goal, and young Saka said he meant it. No chance.
With his weaker foot, no less. Anyway, phenomenal player. I think we kid about this. But let's talk Chelsea, because obviously they spent a lot of money. There's been ups and downs. It's now, what is it, 3 defeats in their last 4. Is any of this on Frank?
I think it has to be. I think only a fool would say it's just the players. I think it's both, really. I mean, Frank's picking a side where he thinks they're going to get 3 points. They're in a run of, as you said, 3 defeats out of 4. They're in bad form. Needs to get players like Kai Havertz and Timo Werner playing. He's got injuries at fullback, so he had to play Reece James, or he thought he had to play Reece James. That was a mistake, in my opinion. I understand playing Ben Chilwell because Emerson's not good enough and can't be trusted. So, yes, it's on Frank's watch, but at the same time, the players have got to do a hell of a lot more.
You said he needs to play, get Kai Havertz playing. Jules, and I think we agree a little bit, I'm not 100% sure you need to win games and get points and build something. Havertz, he's been in, he's been ill, he's out. Can you afford to play Havertz? Because he feels shoehorned into the team every time.
Yeah, but if you're playing in his right position to start with, which we said many times on this show, which is probably behind the striker, that's his best position, you need some creativity.
But then where do you put Mason Mount?
But you find a way of playing Mount and Havertz together, which I still think that's Lampard's job to find a way of doing that.
Well, he did. We saw the Conte Mount Havertz midfield several times. Didn't work out great, did it?
No. But that's true. But then maybe you give Mount a rest, and now they play on Tuesday, on Monday even against Aston Villa, and maybe that's the right time to rest Mount. I just think the lack of creativity against Arsenal for over an hour was just abysmal.
Don, that's one of the big things. And look, as we say this, obviously Chelsea play Villa in a few hours. Maybe they win 8-0 and everything's fine again. But that lack of creativity that Jules talks about, is that the issue? Or, and I only watch this game on TV, but I thought part of the issue was when Frank's system worked well at times last season, you had aggressive, hungry players up the pitch who were pressing, who were tracking back, who were helping out, not leaving their fullbacks exposed. I didn't see that, particularly from Timo Werner against Arsenal.
No, you're right, and we've not seen that for quite a while, and I think it's time now, I think, in my opinion, to take Timo Werner out the side. There's two schools of thought, really. When a player's playing bad, you can either play him through his bad form into good, or when a player's in such a rut and looks a little bit jaded and a little bit tired, because this would normally be his winter break, what I would do with Frank is I'd take Timo Werner out the side, rest him for approximately 10 days. Then in the FA Cup, Chelsea play Morecambe. That might be the game where you play Timo Werner after a little rest and he bags a goal or two or three, and all of a sudden his confidence comes back.
Yeah, to be fair to Timo Werner, he's used to having, you know, he comes from the Bundesliga, he's used to having those long winter breaks, and Chelsea do have alternatives up front on the wing, such as Callum Hudson-Odoi.
He did well when he came on, but Werner looked lost. I mean, it's one of the worst 45 minutes I've ever seen from a player in the Premier League this season. I have to be honest. I was there in the stadium, and this was pathetic. It was not even an under-19. Anyone would have done better than him. It was not possible to believe.
Don, we brought up the fact that Chelsea have been profound changes, obviously. We're talking about half a dozen new players. Is that an alibi for Lampard? How do you handle that? Because I always thought it might be difficult to develop chemistry when you've got to dole out playing time, you have to keep everybody happy. I know we all say it's a long season. Oh, it's a great problem to have too many players. But when you're changing so many players in key positions, it's difficult to develop those, what they call the automatisms in Spain, right?
Yeah, that must be difficult when you build such a big squad. And some managers, if you take Nuno at Wolves, he likes a small squad, so he's got a smaller squad to work with. So you can normally guarantee what his 11 is going to be, you know, bar or two, you know, one or two changes. When you've got a bigger squad and trying to keep multi-million pound players happy who are costing a fortune, not only on their wages, but their price tags, it's almost like you've got to justify them playing. And I think the mistake that Frank's made, and Jules touched on it earlier, is when Kai Havertz has played for Chelsea, he's played in a three-man midfield. In a midfield, that's not his position. Even when you're playing wide left or wide right, it's not really his position. So if you're going to build a side, at least put Kai Havertz as a 10. And I think what Frank's going to experience at Chelsea, being a rookie manager, is he's going to have the odd bad performance. There was a performance last season against Sheffield United that was one of the worst under his watch. Then the West Brom 3-3 was a real nightmare scenario, 3-0 down, and how they come back, I'll never know. And I think these young managers like Arteta, like Oli and like Frank, when they're trying to compete with the likes of Klopp and Guardiola and Mourinho, that can't be easy. So I think every now and again you're going to see a young manager, Frank included, have a really, really, not a bad run of form, but a real bad performance.
But we said at the start of the season, okay, we give him a few games to find the right formula, get the right team in place. It's 5 months now, and there's just nothing. He still keep changing, and the formation, and the personnel, and this, and he make the wrong substitutions, and he make the wrong choices. I mean, you know, there's a time where he needs to get it right.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. He's got a lot of options, too many options, no preseason. Hasn't been helped. He needs to work his way out of it. But I mean, for me, he'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us, which means we can get a little bit more more granular and see if we get a second opinion with Dr. Hutchinson here. Don, all right, we saw Chelsea in the summer. We saw the guys they brought in. And I think the question mark for everybody was, how are these pieces going to fit together? And actually, I had this question last year, too, because they have all these talented young players. And with these guys, you want to give them space on the pitch. But you're not sure how many of these guys will follow you on your journey to go and become a title-challenging team. Personally, I made the point last year that I thought out of all their young players, the only ones who I could see down the road as starters on a Champions League winning or Premier League winning side were Reece James and Callum Hudson-Odoi if he goes back to being what he was before his injury. Now, Mason Mount's obviously shown a lot. Tammy Abraham's shown something. But in your head, right, when the season started and you saw these players, how did you see it working? Like, what sense do you get of, all right, these are the choices he's going to make? And, you know, starting perhaps with the center forward position, where, you know, you signed Timo Werner, who was so effective for Leipzig as a lone striker, although he also has operated wide in the past. He's operated as a second striker. Was Werner going to be a center forward?
I think he was. I think when you, if you ask Frank what his nailed on 11 would have been, you know, once he signed all these Galactico players, I'm pretty sure it would have been Christian Pulisic, it would have been Hakim Ziyech, it would have been Kai Havertz as a 10, and it would have been Timo Werner 9. And I think Frank thought Timo Werner was going to come in and just be so good as a number 9 that he maybe then could have left Tammy Abraham on the bench and maybe allowed Olivier Giroud to move on. Wait. The fact that Timo Werner hasn't hit the ground running as a 9, he's at the shift and then to a left. Then he's got the dilemma, who's best between Giroud and Tammy Abraham.
I just want to follow up on that, because you gave us that front four of Werner, Pulisic, Ziyech, and Kai Havertz. Obviously, Kai Havertz central. That suggests to me a 4-2-3-1 formation. I'm just curious, who would his two have been, and would one of them be Mason Mount?
Well, as the two
in the summer.
No, probably not. I wouldn't have thought.
So you're thinking it would have been Conte with Kovacic or Jorginho? More likely Kovacic.
Yeah, exactly. Two from those three, and that's a hell of a, you know, three to choose from if you're picking two in there. That is some competition for places there.
And Billy Gilmore down the road, of course. Jules?
I like that formation. But Frank Lampard... I like it. He's full of talent. He's very sexy. He's like that. However, Don, when Frank Lampard signed Timo Werner and he went to see him in Germany with Peter Cech, and that's how they got him away from Liverpool, who also maybe didn't have the money anyway. But he knew that Timo Werner could not hold the ball up, right? He knew that Timo Werner could only play one way as a striker, which is... Mm. Make those great runs with all that pace in behind, and that's how he would score goals, right? Because Timo Werner can't really do anything else as a number nine, right? He can't play with his back to goal. He's not really good in the air. He can't hold the ball up. He can't really link up the play. So I get all your point, but when Lampard signed him, he also, I'm really hoping that he knew that Timo Werner could not be that traditional number nine that you also need in the Premier League, because you don't always have that much space like you do in the Bundesliga in pretty much every game.
And just quickly, just to define the term traditional number nine, you're not talking about an Andy Carroll, Alan Shearer number nine.
Yeah,
you're including Aguero, for example, or Papin in that kind of, not necessarily a big man, but a guy who thinks like
a
predator.
A complete striker, or at least, as complete as possible striker.
Yeah, there's different ways to play the number nine position. There's the traditional, because you think big, strong, Raul Jimenez, Andy Carroll, you can put balls in the box. And there's other strikers like Firmino, who comes deep and links the play. And I think, and I'm not comparing the two at all, because Thierry Henry is on a completely another level, another world than Timo Werner. But when Thierry Henry was playing as a nine for Arsenal, he'd done most of his work drifting to the left-hand side, didn't he? He never really stayed as a sort of traditional number nine through that pocket and through into that space. So I think in an ideal world, in an idealistic world, if you can imagine Timo Werner standing still in that number nine position, then you've got Ziyech and you've got Pulisic, all breaking from out to in, playing balls in behind, down the channels and down the sides of centre-halves. There ain't many quicker in world football than Timo Werner. So I think that's the idea I think Frank had for Timo Werner, because his form has been so bad, he's then looked at what he'd done at Leipzig and realised that actually he can play on the left-hand side. Well, if you are going to play him on the left-hand side, you've got the dilemma of Giroud and Tammy Abraham. Then I only think there's one winner there. There's only one contender for that number nine position, and that's Giroud.
You really don't like Tammy Abraham, do you?
That can play that role.
You really? I don't know. For me personally, I think the way this team is, you put Kai Havertz to one side. I'm not saying you never play him, but you say, look, you've come here, you've had no preseason, he came in September during the international break. You're a long-term project, you're very, very young. Let me put you to one side and play you in certain situations. But I'm not going to make you central to this team, not yet.
But you don't think you need creativity down the middle? We saw against Spurs that nil-nil draw, for example, at Stamford Bridge, which it was.
Your creativity comes
from the wings all the time, which is easy to defend against.
Okay, so first of all, you can play Hakim Ziyech down the middle, right?
Yeah.
If you want to do that. But I think the starting point has to be, and should be, with the way this team is put together, a target man center forward, Tammy or Giroud, either one. Also for another reason, remember last year this team gave up like a million set-piece goals?
Yeah.
Both those guys are tremendous defensive headers of the ball, and I think that matters as well. This is not a big team, physically a big team, with the exception, from the midfield onwards, with the exception of Havertz, and who isn't great in the air, even though he's tall, and whoever played, whichever one of the two plays center forward, right? So you start with that. I think Werner might have sat earlier if Pulisic hadn't gotten hurt, because Pulisic obviously can play on the left-hand side as well as the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And then maybe you would have had Hudson-Odoi or Ziyech on the right, and you would have had a three-man midfield. I think the fact that Mount had a really good run, and I think he definitely, if not him, Jody Morris, they have a soft spot for Mount. And they still have that Declan Rice,
that
Mason Mount fantasy in the background.
Yeah, of course. Always there, Declan Rice.
But I think, Don, at this point, though, I think they need to go for something more settled. I like your idea of sitting Werner for a while, trying something else there. But I think the basis of the team, and right now the basis of the team, if you talk about the midfield, I think it has to be Conte and two out of Gilmore, if he's fit, and he obviously likes him, Kovacic and Jorginho, right? Because they really, really struggle, especially with the attacking fullbacks. It's a big ask if you have Mount in the midfield three. It just puts a tremendous amount of pressure. It screws everything up because Jorginho's in there. Conte runs himself into the ground. I mean, surely that's something he'd want to look at. But I want to go back to something else you said about Reece James. Are you not a fan of Reece James?
No, he doesn't think he's fit. He doesn't think he's fit. Yeah. Same with Chilwell.
Well, Azpilicueta was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that was Frank's mistake, because Reece James and Ben Chilwell going into the Arsenal games weren't 100% fit. So he doesn't trust Emerson, so he had to play Chilwell with a knock. And where I think Frank got it wrong in hindsight is he should have played Azpilicueta, because Reece James had an injury.
And Arsenal went all down their left-hand side, the Chelsea right-hand side, also because Pulisic, who started as a right-winger before switching at half-time, it doesn't defend enough to help Reece James, who is not 100% fit. So then when you add Tierney and
Saka...
Martinelli,
I just want to understand this correctly, right? You're playing Arsenal on Boxing Day, and you play two unfit fullbacks, knowing that in 48 hours' time, you have to play the mighty Aston Villa. Well, can you explain this then? Wouldn't you give them a few more days to get fit?
I agree, I can explain it because
he doesn't trust Emerson at all. Emerson's not good enough.
I love this in English. Right, Emerson's not good enough, but whatever. I won't go there. But
he's not good enough.
Yeah. Okay.
I tell you what might be the problem, Gav. And it was fascinating to hear you guys talking there. But when you were chatting there, Gav, and talking out loud, you mentioned, honestly, you must have mentioned about 10 players when you were talking midfield, up front, 10s, 9s. Just said, part of the problem might be for Frank. His squad's too big. He might need to get rid of a few.
That's always the issue. And the difficulty there, I mean, I completely agree with you. The difficulty, either get rid of a few.
In which way? What do you mean? It's too big? What? So...
Well, no. Here's my thing, right? I don't have a problem with big squads. But I think, historically, when big squads are successful, you have a hierarchy, right? You've got 8 or 9 guys who clearly always play when they're fit. I mean, unless they're being rested, right? Yeah. At Chelsea, you have too many question marks, not enough automatic choices. If everybody's fit at Chelsea, and you go through who your automatic choices are, right? People who are clearly a notch above and know they're a notch above and know they're not going to lose their place to somebody else. It's actually very few players. It's N'Golo Kanté.
It's the whole back five to start with. There's no discussion on any
Not
of
really,
that
because
five.
Thiago Silva isn't going to play every game, right? But
no, yeah, but come on, still.
I strongly disagree with that.
So what? Mendy, James, Zuma, Silva, and Chilwell.
He's trying He's trying to do that, right? So yeah. So apart from the fact that I think Rudiger might disagree with that a little bit, and Rudiger might still think that he's better than Kurt Zuma, but whatever.
Yeah, but.
But no. When Frank's made those choices, I agree with you. So you have the back five. I think the issue comes further up the pitch, where you've got a lot of players who are in the same ballpark in terms of ability, and you as a club find it difficult to cut these people loose, right? They could look at this and say, well, I could sell Callum Hudson-Odoi in the summer, right? I'd get some money for him, even though he signed this enormous contract.
Yeah.
But then he'll come back to haunt me if he goes off somewhere else and he turns into goodness knows what. I think that is a difficult part. I think the squad, remember, the squad was even bigger in the summer when they still had Barkley and Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah.
I think that's something they're going to work on, Don, but they're not going to solve their problem if there's still this uncertainty about hierarchy and places. You know, until he says, Pulisic is my right winger, Werner is my left winger, and I'll alternate Abraham and Giroud. I'll figure out Havertz down the road. Matt will play with... Yeah, and then you got Ziyech too.
It's tough. I just don't think that having all those options, it should not be a problem. You're so lucky in a way to have all those options, all that talent, and it shouldn't be a disadvantage.
It can be a disadvantage, Jules, when people like, and I'm not naming names in terms of they're a problem, but if you've got someone like Callum Hudson-Odoi, as Gav mentioned, who was rumoured to be going to Germany, you know, Bayern Munich would have paid massive money for him that hardly played, you know, too many minutes for Chelsea. Then all of a sudden, if you're Frank, you think, do I really want to let him go? Knowing, as Gav said, he could come back to haunt me. But I still know deep down, if I'm picking my strongest 11, Callum Hudson-Odoi is not in Frank's strongest 11. I don't think he is. I think when you've got a massive squad, if you take Bayern Munich, for instance, they might still have a huge squad. But if you want to pick Bayern Munich's 11 in the very biggest of games, I'm pretty sure all three of us now would come up with at least 9 of Bayern starters in the Champions League final. With Chelsea, you're like, players completely out of form. Players like Rudiger can't even get a look in. He's got a Euros to look forward to. There's so many uncertainties that Frank's waiting for his players to kick in and actually force Frank's hand to say, well, look, I am part of your strongest 11. At the moment, none of them are really putting their hand up and saying me, because they're not playing good enough.
I think that's the challenge, and I mean, we've said this all along, it's one of the most difficult things, I think, for Lampard to figure out.
And it's not all his fault, to be fair. You know, there's a lot of responsibility on the players.
Yeah, but also the players just do the best that they can. I mean, every player is motivated to try to play well. That's the sense. I mean,
but his point on Boxing Day was, I warned them before the game. I said to them, it's not going to be easy. Don't take the game lightly. Don't take it for granted. Yeah. And they didn't show.
I would pay very little attention to what Frank Lampard says after games. Not because he's intelligent, but because he knows the routine, right? We've all had time where we've spoken to managers off the record, obviously including you, Don. And you know that what they say to the camera. Right, you have some Andre Villas-Boas, great example, right? He is the exception. I don't know if he still does this in France, but when he was here, if you asked him a tactical question, he'd go into extreme detail, right?
Yeah.
And those of us who are, you know, losers who enjoy hearing about this stuff, we loved it, and that's why he'll always have a special place in our hearts, right? Other people like Frank Lampard, what's he going to say? When you say Werner didn't track back today and it caused an imbalance here and there, no, he's not. He's going to have some generic, oh, we were unprepared, lack of ambition, or whatever.
Was right to be cross, though, with the players.
He's right
who
to be cross. But I would hope that when, and Don, correct me if I'm wrong here, when Lampard goes into his back room with little Jody Morris and they do an inquest about what went wrong, he's not going to talk in general terms about a general unpreparedness, bad wrong attitude, lack of ambition, right? He's going to get specific, but he's not going to share it with us.
Well, I think the specifics come after. You know, the basics of the game. And what Jules is saying and what Frank said, absolutely 100%. You can't protect these players all of the time as a manager. You do your prep work, you pick your team, you pick your squad. At some point, it's on the players to go out and perform. It has to be. You know, I'm not really a fan of, oh, the modern-day player can't be lambasted or you can't have a go at them, you've got to protect them. At some point, I think Frank's right. And I think Jose's done it a million times. We're yet to see Guardiola do it. It's not his style. It's not really Klopp's style. But chuck the players under the bus. Chuck them under the bus, because the performance against Arsenal was terrible.
Yeah, I think there's a difference, though. Chuck them under the bus when you do it as a team and when you name individuals, which some managers have done sometimes with success, other times less so. That's a bit different. All right, final point. I'm going to throw this out to both of you. It's a scenario, right? When Chelsea signed Pulisic, they acquired him and then they left him on loan, right? For six months.
Yeah.
Should they have done the same with Kai Havertz?
Oh.
In hindsight, it's a brilliant question, and probably the answer would be yes. But we weren't to know. He was going to get struck down with COVID, lack of fitness, Chelsea not playing well. But I think if you want me to say yes or no, I think yes.
Yeah, it's easy now to say yes, but we were all very excited when he signed, even if you said that you were not sure it was the right profile. But you also said this is a long-term project. You know, we need time. He's only 20 years
old. So maybe leave him with Peter Boss. The problem is Peter Boss.
But the problem is the same. He stayed with Peter Bosz. They play a completely different style of football, different formation. He would come back even in 6 months or a year, and the issue would still be the same.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Jules, we didn't get a chance to get into this on the last show because the news had literally broke while we were on the air. But Paris Saint-Germain have parted ways with Thomas Tuchel, who, of course, took them to the Champions League final last year. Smart money. It's one of those things where everybody's reporting, oh, it's going to be Pochettino.
Yeah.
Hasn't been announced yet. I presume that has to do with the festivities and negotiating Tuchel's release.
Yes, that's right, Gab. Negotiating Tuchel's release and his severance package, him and his staff. He had like five members of staff with him. It will cost PSG around between 7 and 8 million euros to pay them all off.
Okay. Walk me through this.
Yeah.
Because, right, the man has a contract until June 30th, right?
Yeah.
Now, I know for a fact. So that's 6 months' wages. Now, I know for a fact he does not make 15 or 16 million a year.
No, he makes 620,000 euros.
Okay, don't do this in monthly French thing.
I'm just telling you.
People talk about annuals. It's only in France. Oh, let's be done. No, it's sorry, not just France. Yeah. It's also your brethren in this scepter
dial. In a lot of countries.
Oh, yeah, let's do weekly. Wait, what about weekly wages? You like that one?
No, no, no. We took per month in France.
Okay, fine. So he makes about 7.5 million euros a year, right? Yeah. So half of that is 3.75 million. So I would have thought 6 months' wages, just pay him that and say, vielen Dank,
Thomas. But there's also bonuses, as you know, in any contract, players, managers, there's bonuses for where you finish in the league, the points that you gain.
They're going to give him a bonus for the fact that he's third in the table?
He's got bonuses for how many points they've got. He's got bonuses for qualifying for the Champions League, like 16 bonuses that are in every contract for every player, every manager.
Okay, so and this adds up to another, between that and his staff wages, that adds up to another 4 million?
So, yeah, so I think he's on five. And then you had five members who also had, some had more than 6 months left because some arrived a bit later, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, so it's, but it's not as much as Laurent Blanc, for example, who was sacked not long after extending his deal, crazily enough, who
got paid 22 million euros. You know, if you have a contract, I get it. But like, I keep beating this drum, but whether it's players or managers, clubs don't seem to understand that there are fewer big clubs than there are managers and big players. And the way they fall in love with people and say, we need to give you this massive contract. I mean, at least they didn't extend Tuchel after he got them in Champions League final. But I just find this mad.
No, but they could have waited until the end of the season. And so let him run down his contract, and they might have to.
Or put him on gardening leave, which is what we do in Italy.
You're not allowed in France. You can't do that. I mean, you in Italy, you've got like four managers, five managers, all at the club at the same time, not working for four or five of them.
Enough Tuchel.
Yeah.
Actually, though, you know, he's been already linked, Bild, very helpfully.
Yeah, of
linking
course.
Him to the Chelsea job, which I think we talked about Chelsea earlier.
And to the Manchester United, at some point, he will be linked with as well.
Of course, Edwin natural fit. We don't need to go there. But Pochettino. Obviously, he's played there before. I'm just wondering, from his perspective, he and Allegri were the eternal candidates.
They were.
He probably feels a need to get back into it very, very quickly because he's going to come, and we'll get into this further, but he's going to come to a Paris Saint-Germain where, you know, the party days are kind of over because you've had the pandemic, you've had Ligue 1 stopping, you've got financial fair play. Is this the right move for him, or should he maybe have hung around a little bit longer for...
I mean, you could always say he might have waited 6 months until June or the summer, and then the Real Madrid job might have come up, or the Manchester United job might have come up. But
exactly what I'm asking.
Yeah, but they might not have come up either. So if you're him, what do you do? Do you think like, okay, I can wait? I think he really wanted one day to go back to Paris. It will be announced in the next few days now, almost 20 years to the day after he joined as a player in January 2001. And I think part of his managerial career in his head had to stop in Paris at some point. So I think he took it now. He probably thinks that he's young enough maybe to then go to Real Madrid or Manchester United or anywhere else. There would be time. But he certainly thought this was a really good project. Even if he won't be able to spend 200 million in January or next summer in transfers, he knows this is a really strong squad. His assistant, Jesus Perez and Miguel D'Agostino, are already working on, you know, the when they go back from the holidays on January the 3rd, sorry, and things like that, what to put in place, how to work fitness-wise, especially before the second half of the season starts. So I think he's very committed, very excited.
I think this makes, joking aside, I think this makes a ton of sense for Pochettino because, you know, you got a strong chance, you win silverware, you get that so stupid, you're rubbish, you've never won anything. You win something this year, right? And then for Paris Saint-Germain, they got the guy they wanted.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us. Now, most people who don't follow PSG and in Ligue 1 as closely, They see this as a big glamour club, the glamour city. It is the glamour city. Mm-hmm. They see them spending money, throwing money around, blah, blah, blah. We've touched upon it before. Not only do they have to be responsible going forward, they've actually had to be responsible for the last few seasons.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the screws were turned on them with financial fair play, which is why all those young players were sold and whatever. Looking at the squad now, and there's obviously an enormous question mark with Neymar's future, as there seems to be every single year. And obviously, shifting Neymar means you free up a lot in terms of wage space, then you've got more flexibility. But in the immediate, what does a squad need? What does the squad need to have another run at the Champions League this year and make sure that they don't screw up Ligue 1?
It's very interesting. I think they're still short of fullbacks, for example. I think Florenzi has done quite well, especially going forward, but defensively is not the most solid. As much as you love him, you know, this is...
He's a winger. A winger who learned to play right back.
Our left back, Bernat, is injured. And although he was very good before, you don't know at what kind of level he's going to come back or whenever he's going to come back anyway. And then behind, you've got Kurzawa and Mitchell Bakker, and then that's it. So right. I still think that there's a problem. I still think that in midfield, they could do with a bit more creativity maybe, or at least a bit more impact. They've got a lot of players like Paredes, like Idrissa Gueye, who I don't think are good enough if you want.
Verratti's creativity not enough?
Yeah, for you? Yeah, Verratti, but you know, he has to stay fit and he has to stay at the top of his fitness to be able to have an impact. And we saw how different this team is when he's on and when he's not. But you need him and maybe someone else who is a bit like him if you play 4-3-3 formation, for example, which they don't really have right now. And then I think going forward, if Icardi can finally go back to the Icardi of the best of his inter time, then I think right. They're fine.
Okay. So figuring out what they can do, because obviously they've been linked to Christian Eriksen, obvious creativity, although that's an enormous salary. I would assume they would have to shift somebody. There's been links sending Paredes the other way. I don't see why Inter would need Paredes when you've got other people who play that position, like, say, the Bras, finally.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, is the great Julian Draxler experiment, that's done. He hasn't made the grade.
They tried to sell him hard in the summer.
And you can't sell him because he makes too much money.
They're going to try again because he's got 6 months left on his contract. So they're hoping that maybe someone will take him for a little fee in January, but at least you save his wages.
I presume he makes less money than Eriksen, even though he's on enormous money.
Or very similar, maybe, yeah.
That might actually be something that might make a tiny bit of sense for Inter. You listening, Antonio? No. Draxler's never played in the Premier League, and he's not in his 30s, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no.
He needs to go to West Ham for a season and then...
Well, that's the Paredes problem, too.
Yeah,
right?
Very true. But Idrissa Gueye has played in the Premier League, so maybe...
Yeah, Inter don't need and yet another holding midfielder. Inter have 11 central midfielders. Let's go back to Paris Saint-Germain, though, a second. What's the general sense? Because inevitably, and we'll get into Messi more later in quick hits, but inevitably when the issue came up of Messi not staying at Barcelona, everybody said, oh, surely it's Manchester City, reunite with Pep, or it's Paris Saint-Germain, reunite with Neymar. Now, do we agree the only way this happens is if Mbappe goes or Neymar leaves? It's not tenable that Mbappe, Neymar, and Messi, they can't afford all three of them.
I don't think so.
It's impossible.
I mean, they say they're going to try, and they say they're going to try to work out if it's possible, find a way. Obviously, Messi would come on a free, but if he's on the wages that he's in now, Barcelona, which is almost 50 million a year, I cannot see how it's possible.
Those are net numbers, by the way. Yeah. So for those keeping track at home, it would cost them... If he's going to be on the same money, it would cost them close to 100 million a year. Also, because the French tax man is pretty nasty, right?
It is. Although you can find there's little loopholes there and there, but still, it wouldn't save them that much money anyway on such a big contract.
Unless they shift Neymar or Mbappe.
But no one today can afford either of them. Not even Real Madrid. I'm sorry, Real Madrid don't have the money today, I think, to buy Kylian Mbappe in the summer and pay him the wages that he would want to be paid after such a big move. I'm not sure Real Madrid have that money.
Right. So we'd be talking Messi taking a pay cut.
So it's either Messi takes a pay cut, but it has to
like
be
an enormous pay cut.
Yeah, because the priority, and that's what PSG is still saying, is to extend Neymar and Mbappe's contract or finish in June 2022.
You know what I love in these narratives that we create? Oh, but look, Pochettino's there, so he's going to want to be there because he wants to be with Pochettino. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, okay, so they're both from Argentina, right? No, Pochettino is linked with Rosario and everything. But what we think, like, Messi's going to go there and start drinking mate, listen to cumbia with Poch. Surely there's got to be more to it.
But Gab, come on. You know that if you're Messi and you say, okay, this is the two options that we have, Man City and PSG. At least if PSG have a manager that speaks your language,
what language does Pep speak?
No. But I mean, if it'd been Tuchel, for example, you know, you could have seen Messi saying, oh, Tuchel, well, you know, like, how do you communicate with him? This is not the same culture. It's not the same background at all. At least if this is someone like Messi.
I tell you this is for you about Messi's future. He spent 20 years at the same club. Nowhere in the world is going to find the same culture. He's going to have to adjust. Maybe Poch might help in some way. Sure.
Like Pep would help for sure. But you know what? Deep inside, Messi wants to stay in Barcelona. I said it on the show last night, on the TV show. For me, I've got no doubt that if the conditions are there, he will stay. However, if there's a little chance that he could go, and that chance could be in Paris, having Poch there is a bigger asset than having Tuchel and his German technical staff with him. No, but it's true.
Technical after the word German. It has certain connotations. No, right? Okay. It comes naturally.
German coaching staff.
I take your point. Last point, Pochettino, what sort of length and size of contract are we talking about? Is that
coming? Two and a half years, which I think
so
is decent.
So they're not tying themselves into the long 7-year contract.
I thought you'd be happy that it's not an Alan Pardew 12 years contract somewhere, or David Moyes at United.
Didn't Big Sam have the 10-year rolling contract? Gosh, but incredible. Then, like, you could give, like, 1 week's notice and whatever.
But I'm excited. You know, the first game is Jan the 6th. Then Jan the 13th, you've got the French Community Shield that could not be played in the summer against Marseille. So straight in, Poch will have the big derby and the rivalry and everything. And then Barcelona at the end of February, mid-February in the Champions League, last 16, first leg. I mean, like, it's super exciting. I know they ruined Thomas Tuchel's Christmas, which is bad.
It is pretty Grinch-like.
It's Grinch-like. However, I think he got a lot of people excited in Paris.
Yeah, and I also can think, Thomas, I like you. I'm a Tuchelista, as you know. But you got, 7.5 million reasons to be happy? We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Ligue 1 sponsored by Uber Eats. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Leicester City and Manchester United battled to a 2-2 draw, Jules, with the benefit of captain hindsight. We know that a win for either could have left them second right now, 2 or 3 points respectively off the top. Who has the bigger regret in this game?
It has to be for United because Jamie Vardy scored late to get a point for Leicester, although I think the draw was a fair result. I just think, again, this is a United side that works because of Bruno Fernandes. This is not a team. This is not a collective unit that knows exactly what you have to do in your system, in your tactics, in that identity. It's just rely a lot on him and a bit of Marcus Rashford, who, to be fair, should have had a hat-trick as well. I just don't know. Every time I watch them like this, I feel a bit, it could be so much better.
But at least they're up there and that builds confidence.
Yeah, they didn't lose, of course.
And look, Rashford's finishing isn't going to be like this all the time.
But instead, it's Everton who are second after beating Sheffield United 1-0, thanks to Gylfi Sigurdsson. Gab, Ancelotti is doing it without Alan, without James, without Dean, without Richarlison. Can they stay up there?
If you're asking, can they stay second at the end of the year? No, I really genuinely don't think so.
It would be amazing.
However, this is pretty remarkable. This is the run where they were supposed to be dropping points and falling behind.
Because against Sheffield United?
No, not Sheffield United so much. But the run of games that they've had before this, and yet they're right up there. I think it tells you when you only beat Sheffield United 1-0, no disrespect to Chris Wilder, it tells you you're not at your best. But, you know, he's using the whole squad. Anthony Gordon, he's gone with
Hulk a four. Gator right back.
Four center backs, two of them impersonating fullbacks. So, you know, it's rolling along, but, you know, the test will come when everybody's fit again.
Yeah.
Liverpool stay first, but are held by West Brom. 1-1. Jules Klopp said the opposition played a 4-6-0 formation, but also that they deserved their point. Is this an example of Big Sam Allardyce holiday magic?
I'm not sure, because Bilic did the same at Man City a week ago. So it was very similar.
Yeah, Bilic got big results against big teams too.
Yeah, so it's not just Sam, I think. I looked at times, it was more of a 5-5-0 to me than the 4-6-0, but hey, it worked. Listen, they were good after the hour mark when Matip came off. They had a couple of good counter-attacks, and then they scored at the end that goal. I don't know, you know what I felt? I felt like Liverpool... The players thought, you know what, let's just control that 1-0. And it's always so dangerous.
And they had the chance at the end. Of course, Sam Johnson made a great save.
He did against City as well. Great save at the end, Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is a game for Thiago Alcantara. This is a game for 100%. Where he was signed for. And this is a game where they certainly missed him.
Yeah. Lionel Messi gave a rare and long interview to Spanish TV channel La Sexta last night on Sunday night. As we know, he's out of contract in June. There's plenty of speculations. He could go to City and rejoin Pep. But he threw another possibility out there.
Yeah, and this is interesting because obviously he's been linked to City, he's been linked to Paris Saint-Germain. The interviewer, thinking he was being clever, actually probably doing exactly what I would do, said, oh, look, either. I have a guidebook, a Manchester guidebook, and I have a Paris guidebook. By the way, I guess the interviewer was a visitor from the 1980s. Today, I think most people have guide apps on their phone rather than actual physical guidebooks. But anyway... And he was prompting him towards City of Paris or Paris Saint-Germain. And out of the blue, he says, well, you know, at some point, you know, I'd like to live and play in the United States. So all of a sudden, boom, 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 MLS, ka-ching, yo.
Ka-ching. I mean, surely you hear that. This morning, I'm really hoping that right now, they're on a Zoom conference call. You know, MLS, the commissioner, all the franchises, everybody. Saying like, hey, who can afford him? Who can bring him?
Nothing like this, by the way, to set the conspiracy theorists afloat. They're saying, oh, yeah, look, he'll go to Manchester City with Pep, and then maybe Manchester City send Pep and Messi together to NYCFC.
Oh, my God.
How about that? That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Others, oh, look, he owns an apartment in Miami. Maybe it's that. No?
Maybe David Beckham.
Yeah, but we both think he's going to stay in Barcelona with a new president and a new manager next year, right?
As much as I would love him in Paris, I just think that deeply inside, and he said it in the interview, he said that even if he leaves, he wants to come back and live in Barcelona. That's his club. And if all the conditions are there, but it depends a lot, you're right, as who's going to be the next president and what his team would be around him, I think he would want to stay.
Now, Messi also said that it was crazy that Barcelona should not only let Suarez go for free to a direct rival, Atletico Madrid, but also pay him to go away. Do you agree that it was crazy?
We said from the beginning that it was absolutely mental and a disgrace the way they treated Luis Suarez, Bartomeu, Ronald Koeman, that 30-second phone call, the way Bartomeu and everybody at that club sort of kicked him out of a club where he's been so good. Even if he was old, and I was the first one to criticise him in the last two seasons, he's on one knee, he's overweight. But you can't treat people like this.
I'll be the boring man with the accountant, with the balance sheet and the P&L. They had to get rid of him because they simply couldn't afford to keep him. However, there's a classy way to do it. And also, there's an intelligent way. Because you know what? They may tell us otherwise. They were set up for him to join Juventus, right? That was all set up.
Yeah.
And then Juventus sign Weston McKennie and they take up the spot. Then Luis Suarez maybe doesn't realize the seriousness of the situation. He doesn't get his European Union passport while he's still in Spain.
Goes through the
nonsense in Italy. And then now there's an investigation because did he fake the whole, was the whole thing staged? There's a criminal investigation.
Yeah, of course.
People tested
it was a disgrace.
So it's an absolute mess. And that is, I think, what you blame Bartomeu for or the whole Barcelona leadership team more than the fact they let Luis Suarez go.
Speaking of Messi, Pelé's old club Santos have disputed the fact that he broke the record of most goals for a single club. Remember, the 6-4-3. In a lengthy statement, Santos argue that Pelé actually scored 1,091 goals purely and only for Santos, not 6-4-3. Gab, does math work differently in Brazil?
All right. So first
what
of all,
heck? I mean,
first of all, this is a stupid off-brand record, which is completely meaningless. And by the way, in the interest of safety, I'm not saying this to belittle Messi because he's one of the greatest ever. I'll say the same thing about Cristiano's record that he's going to go and beat Beacon or whoever's record he's beating with his, you know, on his way to the game has changed. These are different eras. These are different situations. What Santos are arguing. And there is a tiny bit of merit in this, that they got to the 1,091 total because saying they're counting friendly matches. But they're not counting friendly matches against, you know, some third division teams because they say that back then they had a long off season and teams played fewer games and so they organized more friendlies. And look, you know, he scored against Boca Juniors and Inter Milan and all these big teams and so they should count those goals too. I don't know. And then I'll come back and I'll count Messi's goals in friendly matches. Let's count Messi's goals in the ICC. Or maybe what? How about we don't count all this stuff because these are stupid Fugazi records. They don't mean anything.
It's still impressive to score 6-4-3 or 6-4-4 for the same club. It's just mental.
And even more impressive to score 1,091.
Yeah, true.
Despite losing Kyle Walker and Gabriel Jesus to positive COVID tests, Manchester City beat Newcastle United, and Pep is very pleased with the performance.
Yeah.
Jules, are you as pleased as he
is?
No.
I mean, he said it was the best performance of the season. I was like, what? Sure. What game? Maybe we didn't watch the same game. Hey, listen, they're more solid. He's happy with that. They should have scored more goals. They didn't. It was still not great to watch, I have to be honest. But if he's happy...
What does it say that the best performance comes without Aguero or Jesus, but with Ferran Torres at center forward?
Yeah. Still no. A superb Tanguy and Ndombele goal in the first minute. Give Tottenham an early lead at Wolverhampton on Sunday night. But he finishes 1-1 and Jose Mourinho is grumpy, citing a lack of ambition. Not taking responsibility, of course, as always.
I think players kind of generally try to do what the manager tells them to do. Look, it's easy to say they scored early, they planned to hit on the break, and that was the right game plan. It was the right game plan. But the problem is, when you play that way, you need people who are sharp and good on the break. And Son and Kane were poor.
They've played 100 games already this season. It's mental. Why did he play them in the Europa League?
That is a very, very valid question. And that's where he sets him up a little bit with this. His game plan at the beginning, though, I thought it was good with Reguilon and Davies in the back.
One shot on target. No shot on target after the 21st minute. What team does that?
That's the problem. Diego Costa goes out of contract in June and won't be getting a new one at Atletico. Jules, might he be the answer for somebody out there? Or is he China-bound? Like maybe the guy who looks after Diego Costa who advises him, maybe. He's a couple kinds at a club in North London, maybe?
Yeah, who's that? Oh, yeah.
He's not coming to Arsenal, no?
I don't know. I don't think so.
He's 32. He can still mix it up.
He still had that aggression in him. If he's fit, but he hasn't been...
Diego Costa to Wolves. That was the ultimate crossover, Kia Giraption, George Mendes.
Yeah, you can monitor young Fabio Silva as well, you know, giving a bit more hunger. And
mind the shop or Raul Jimenez is
imagine. Oh, amazing. Let's see. I still think he can do a good job somewhere in Europe. Doesn't have to go to China or to the Gulf. 10 years ago, Sami Khedira and Mesut Ozil both joined Jose Mourinho's Real Madrid. 6 years ago, they won a World Cup together for Germany in 2014. Now, they are prisoners. I can't believe you put prisoners. Okay, they're tied up, let's put it that way, to massive expiring contracts at clubs who don't want them. Do they have anything left to give somewhere to someone?
Clubs who don't want them and don't play them.
But there's a reason why they don't play them.
Mesut Ozil hasn't played since March. Sami Khedira hasn't played since June. Now, look, there's a neat symmetry here, right? Here you've got two German guys who were so successful, played for the biggest clubs in the world, won a World Cup.
They were good. There was a time where they were good.
Signed enormous contracts.
Yeah.
And now their clubs saying, I don't want you anymore, blah, blah, blah. And maybe they're saying, oh, no, I want to hang on to my contract. Sami Khedira could have left over the summer. Mesut Ozil could have left over the summer. They didn't.
That was their choice.
It's just an ironic portrait of modern football and the pitfalls involved in this. That's all it is. Yeah. I hope they come back and they contribute somewhere. The Daily Telegraph is reporting that Phil Foden is frustrated with his lack of playing time at Manchester City, though he did play a whole minute against Newcastle on Boxing Day. Jules, he's 20. Should he be patient or seek a move?
What 20-year-old play regularly in one of the top clubs in Europe? Tell me.
Kylian Mbappe. Boom.
He's 22.
Done.
So he's not even 20.
But he played regularly when he was 20.
Phil Foden started 5 out of the 6 Champions League matches so far. He started 5 out of 10 in the Premier League. Okay, maybe in the Premier League he wanted to play more. But come on, take your time. You're only 20 years of age, man. Your time will come. Milan are first in Serie A, but Hakan Çalhanoğlu, Gigi Donnarumma and Zlatan Ibrahimovic are all off contract in June. Gab, if you're in charge of that club, what do you prioritise?
You prioritise Gigi Donnarumma and you sacrifice the other two if you need to. He is the key to everything.
No. Keep them on.
Marcel Sabitzer's deal with Leipzig expires in 2022 when contract talks have stalled. Now, he's been linked with a move to Spurs. Does that make sense to you, Jules, or is there maybe another club in North London that should be taking a look at?
There is another club. I think Arsenal are very keen as well. I think there's a few English clubs who are very keen. He would be perfect for the Premier League, the way he plays.
He's 26 years old.
26 years old, the good age, all that energy. I think he needs to work a bit. I mean, the experience is there tactically. He's had a great manager for many, well, a few more than one even. So I think he's ready. He's just ready. Maybe he needs a bit of time, that's what I was going to say, to adapt. But I'm not even sure he needs that. It would be a great signing. You potentially quite cheap as well for the kind of player that you're getting.
Because he's got a year left on his contract.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Who would you, from his personal development perspective, would you advise Spurs and Mourinho or Arsenal and Arteta? What's a better fit for him? Oh, he's on the spot because if he says Spurs, then obviously, what about his boy Ndombele, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or Sissoko even. I mean, Sissoko is the boss. No one can take his place. And you saw without him yesterday what happened.
Yeah, I don't think this guy's a Mourinho player.
I see what you mean. That's what I was going to say. I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Notice how he avoids the question. Right.
No. I was thinking. Antonio Conte says he wants another striker to challenge for the title, and reports are linking Inter to both. Listen to this. Divock Origi and Gervinho. Your thought, Gab? I mean, I'm giving up. If they sign one of them two, I'm giving up. I'm giving up on Conte, Inter, Serie A, Italian football, everything.
Inter have reached the stage. Now, as far as we know, the report is that Divock Origi has been offered to Inter. But the issue with Inter now is people know the types of players you sign, so they offer you people. People look at Divock Origi. Oh, look, Premier League. He's not quite 30 yet, so that's a bad thing. But on the upside, look, he comes from a big Premier League team.
Yeah.
Presumably, he's on decent wages. And
low in the pecking order.
Low in the pecking order. Hasn't played much. Scored some important goals on television. Oh, yeah. Hey, sure, Antonio Conte is going to be interesting.
I cannot believe that.
But what's the alternative? Gervinho, who
someone
is,
else. What do you mean? There's not just two players they can sign in January.
You know, the worst thing, the Gervinho deal, it's talked about Gazzetta dello Sport this morning. So to make the Gervinho deal happen, now bear in mind, they're looking for somebody who can be an alternative to Romelu Lukaku, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, Gervinho, Lukaku, pretty much identical players, right? To get Gervinho, they're thinking, maybe we can send them Pinamonti the other way. Pinamonti may not be a superstar, okay? He's not. Maybe he'll never be one. But he's homegrown. Yeah. He's 21 years old.
Yeah.
He's big and tall and strong. He's a under 21 international. Why don't you find out? You're not playing European football. You're playing once a week the rest of the season, right?
Yeah.
So why? Right. Why this messing around?
Makes no sense.
People are thinking, sense. I'm hoping because I always have faith. I'm hoping that this is simply misdirection from Inter.
Yeah.
Let's act foolish.
Yeah, you're right.
And then we'll get the guy we really want.
Really?
And it'll be somebody really good and young and cheap. And we'll get them to take Eriksen and Vecino. All the guys we don't want, we can send them the other way. It'll be brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let's see.
It's party time for the injured Neymar in Brazil. Local media have hammered him for supposedly arranging a five-day extravaganza for 500 of his closest friends. And this is all in the midst of a pandemic that has claimed nearly 200,000 lives in Brazil. Are you buying this, Jules, or is this a bit over the top?
So his camp now saying that it's not as big as that what's been reported, that he's just a New Year's Eve party, not over 5 days, as in like five different evenings, five different parties, not so many people, that they would be very careful and all that kind of stuff.
It's a social distance
it down.
Party.
We're playing it down, but in Brazil, you have no restrictions on how many people you can hang out with, indoors or outdoors. That's also what they're saying, but it's not very... It's not the best of luck, is it?
No, really. Not a good luck.
And also, I was not invited, which I was a bit upset with, to be fair. Cristiano Ronaldo wins an award at Globe Soccer in Dubai, like he usually does, as the best player of the year. But Gab, when asked about his son, Cristianinho, he was a bit critical.
He was.
What happened?
Said Cristianinho, who, by the way, Cristianinho is 10 years old, okay? He plays in Juve's, one of Juve's youth teams. He's like, well, yeah, he's a good player, but he eats potato chips and he drinks Coca-Cola.
He's 10.
I'm sure that Cristiano, when Cristiano was 10 years old, he turned his body into a temple. The temple it is today, the one we all worship. Right, that brings us to an end. Jules, but let's come back on Thursday. Do this again.
Oh,
right?
There's loads of things to talk about.
We'll have Serie A. We'll have La Liga. We'll have more Premier League because party never stops
Big show.
Here.
Big show.
Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.